Hello and welcome back to Corona Cold Reads, my entertainment world's answer to social isolation. Now that we've completed Shakespeare and Chekhov's canons, our troupe of professional and amateur theater lovers together is taking on great works across mediums. So from Aaron Sorkin to indie playwrights, Valentine's rom-coms, French classics, Greek tragedies, so much more. We've got everything coming up for you. So Shaw, Stoppard, Moliere, Efron, and so much more coming down the pike. So for you to enjoy in audio form here on our podcast feed. Or if you want to catch all of our costumes, props, effects, and unplanned pet appearances, all of our readings are also available on our YouTube channel. Just search My Entertainment World and you'll see it there. Please keep in mind that these are genuinely cold readings we're publishing unedited, so bear with us through some stumbles, tangents, and of course, every time someone's accidentally on mute. That happens all the time. Sometimes people don't show up. You just got to bear with us. So to make sure you don't miss any of our content, be sure to subscribe on YouTube or on our podcast feed, where you'll find episodes of all our favorite ongoing series, including this one, of course, as well as the Shakespeare series, the favorite series, Corona Movie Club, exclusive interviews, as well as our annual MLB roundtable discussion, which is my very favorite thing we do. So follow us on social media at myentworld, my E-N-T world. And of course, check out the website, myentertainmentworld.ca, where you can find all of the above, as well as reviews, editorials, artist spotlights, and so much more. So thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoy the show. To cap off our modern Greek interpretation season, we have Antigone. And bear with me, I cannot pronounce this playwright's name to save my life, but I believe it is Jean Ennui. Don't kill me. I think that's how you pronounce it. But anyway, he wrote a beautiful version of Antigone. So our leading lady here is Nicole Falgu, which it was very exciting to have her play this role. She hasn't done a ton of leads for us, but she has this sort of steadfast ferocity where it doesn't come out a lot, but like if you mess with her people, she will come for you. And I love that about Nicole. She sort of presents as a bit of an ingenue, and then but you like mess with her and there's this inner strength that is unmovable. And I found that very compelling for Antigone. She's also just like whip smart, and that's always helpful. Here we also have Christopher Prentice playing Creon, which is interesting because he had played Creon in Medea 2 weeks ago. But it is important to note that because the Greeks are very confusing, it is a totally different person. He played two different Creons. Creon as a sort of figurehead has a similar vibe in both plays, but he is in fact a different person. So that's important to note. The other major piece of casting here that I want you to note for you is that our Ismene was Shruti Kothari, who is one of my very best friends, but she's also just a very celebrated actress. She's a Dora winner. She's a Stratford alum. She's wonderful, and she has been out of the game for, well, actually, I mean, the same time as everybody else because of COVID, but she's been out of the game for a few years now for medical reasons, and so it was really, really thrilling to have her come back and play this beautiful, sensitive character of Ismene, who is so sweet and supportive, and it was really touching to have Shruti come back to play this. And it's always so lovely to see her, and she's such a wonderful stage presence. So I hope you enjoy Antigone. It's a beautiful text. Hard play, but it's not super dark. It's dark, but it's written with some levity and such a contemporary eye that it's somehow it's manageable. It feels good. It feels cathartic and moving. And inspiring, despite being dark and hard and complicated, really complicated. So I hope you enjoy it. It's a really beautiful piece that I think should be produced more often.
Hello, and welcome to Corona Cold Reads, live reading of Antigone by Jean Ennui. I am Elizabeth Rose Morris, and I'll be reading stage directions. In our cast, we have as chorus and third guard, Gabby Grice.
Hi.
As nurse, second guard, and messenger, Claudia Liz.
Hi, everyone.
Antigone, Nicole Falgu.
Hello.
Creon, Chris Prentice.
Hello.
Ismene and Paige, Shruti Kothari.
Hello.
Haman and guard, Sean Wilson.
Hello.
And that is everyone. Turn off my camera. A featureless room. Three identical doors. As the curtain rises, all the characters are on stage. They talk, knit, play cards, etc. The chorus comes forward.
So, here we are. These people are going to perform for you the story of Antigone. Antigone is the little one sitting over there, saying nothing, staring intently at nothing. She's thinking. She's thinking that she's about to become Antigone, that she's about to emerge from the dark, skinny, brooding girl that no one in her family ever took seriously, and stand up alone to face the world, to face Creon, her uncle, who is the king. She's thinking that she's going to die, that she's young, and that she too would have wanted very much to live. But there's nothing she can do. Her name is Antigone, and she will have to play her part through to the end. Since the curtain rose, she has felt herself rushing with dizzying speed away from her sister Ismene, who's talking and laughing with that young man over there, away from all of us who sit here calmly looking at her, all of us who do not have to die tonight. The young man talking with the blonde, the beautiful, the happy Ismene is Haemon, Creon's son. He is engaged to Antigone. Anyone would have guessed that he would choose Ismene, considering his taste for games and dancing, his attraction to happiness and success, and his taste for women, too, since Ismene is much prettier than Antigone. But one night, at a party where he had danced with no one but Ismene, who looked radiant in a new dress, he went and found Antigone daydreaming in a corner like she is now, arms around her knees, and he asked her to be his wife. No one ever knew why. Antigone looked up at him with serious eyes, without a hint of surprise, and she said, yes, with a sad little smile. The orchestra struck up a new dance. Ismene laughed out loud. All the young men gathered around her. And just like that, Haemon was going to be Antigone's husband. He didn't know that there could never be a husband of Antigone on this earth, and that this great honor would earn him nothing but an early death. The sturdy, white-haired man standing deep in thought over there next to his page is Creon. He's the king. His face is lined. He's tired. Every day he plays the difficult game of leading men. Once, during the reign of Oedipus, when he was the most popular man at court, he devoted himself to music, ancient manuscripts, long afternoons browsing in the antique shops of Thebes. But Oedipus and his sons are dead. So Creon put away his books and his antiques, he rolled up his sleeves, and he took their place. Sometimes, in the evenings, when he's very tired, he wonders if it isn't pointless, leading men. He wonders if he shouldn't leave the sordid job to someone else, someone less refined, less sensitive. And then in the morning, the more immediate problems present themselves, waiting to be solved, and he gets up, calmly, like any workman at the start of a new day. The old woman knitting next to the nurse who raised the two girls is Eurydice, Creon's wife. She'll go on knitting through the whole play until her turn comes to get up, go back to her room, and die. She is a good, noble, loving woman, and she is of no help to her husband. Creon is alone. Alone with his page, who is too young to be of any help to him either. The pale young man back there, lost in thought, leaning against the wall, alone, is the messenger. He'll be arriving to announce the death of Haemon in a little while. That's why he has no interest in talking or mingling with the others. He already knows. Finally, the three red-faced men playing cards, collars unbuttoned, those are the guards. They're decent guys. They have wives and children and little problems just like everyone else's, but soon you'll see them dragging in the accused with the most absolute tranquility. They smell of garlic, leather, and beer, and they are completely devoid of imagination. They are the servants, eternally innocent and always satisfied with the justice they deliver. For the moment, until the rightful ruler of Thebes gives the orders to arrest him in his turn, these men are servants of Creon's justice. And now that you know everyone, they'll be able to tell you their story. It begins at the moment when the two sons of Oedipus, Eteocles and Polynices, who were supposed to take turns ruling Thebes a year at a time, fought and killed each other outside the walls of the city. Eteocles, the elder, at the end of the first year, having refused to yield the throne to his brother. Seven great foreign princes, whom Polynices had won over to his cause, were defeated before the seven gates of Thebes. Now the city has been saved, the two feuding brothers are dead, and Creon, the king, has ordered that Eteocles, the good brother, should be given a grand funeral, but that Polynices, the villain, the traitor, should be left unmourned and unburied, food for the jackals and the vultures. Whoever dares to offer him the sacred funeral rites will be mercilessly put to death.
As the chorus was speaking, the characters have exited one by one. The chorus disappears as well. The light has changed on stage. It is now a pale gray dawn in a sleeping house. Antigone cracks open the door and returns from outside in her bare feet, on tiptoe, sandals in hand. She stays frozen a moment, listening. The nurse appears.
Where have you been?
I've been out walking, nurse. It was beautiful. Everything was gray. Now you have no idea. It's already all pink and yellow and green. It's turned into a postcard. You have to get up earlier, nurse, if you want to see the world that color.
She goes to leave.
I get up when it's still dark. I go to your room to see if you're thrown off the blanket in your sleep, and you're not even in bed.
The garden was still asleep. I surprised it, nurse. It had no idea I was watching. It's beautiful, a garden that isn't yet thinking of men.
You'd gone out. I went to the back door. You'd left it open.
In the fields, everything was wet and waiting. Everything was waiting. My footsteps were so loud in the silence, walking all alone along the road, and I was so sad because I knew that everything was waiting, but not for me. So I took off my sandals and slipped into the field so quietly it didn't notice me.
You should wash your feet before you go back to bed.
I'm not going back to bed this morning.
At 4 o'clock? It wasn't 4 o'clock yet. I get up to see if she's thrown off her blanket. I find her bed cold and nobody in it.
Do you think if you got up like this every morning, nurse, that it would be this beautiful every morning to be the first girl outside?
Night. It was night. And you want me to believe that you were out walking, you little liar. Where have you been?
That's true. It was still night. And there was no one in the whole countryside but me to think that it was morning. It's glorious, nurse. I was the first person to believe in this day.
Play the fool, play the fool. I know that song. I was a girl before you were. And not a pushover either, but never pig-headed like you. Where have you been, you wicked girl?
No, not wicked.
You went to meet someone, didn't you? Go on, deny it.
Yes, I went to meet someone.
You have a lover?
Yes, nurse. Yes, poor thing. I have a lover.
How proper. How nice. You, the daughter of a king. You take such trouble. You take such trouble to bring them up. They're all the same. You, however, were never like the others. Never primping in front of the mirror, wearing lipstick, dying for someone to notice you. How many times did I say to myself, my lord, this girl, if only she were more of a flirt. Always wearing the same dress, hair always a mess. The boys will only have eyes for Ismene. With her curls and her ribbons, they'll leave this one on my hands forever. And now, you see, you were just like your sister, only worse, a hypocrite. Who is it? Some street rat, I suppose, hmm? Some boy you can't bring home to your family and say, here he is, I love him, I want to marry him. Is that it, hmm? Is that it? Answer me, you shameless.
Yes, nurse.
And she says, yes, Lord have mercy. When she was a baby, I promised her poor mother that I would make an honest woman out of her. And look, the story's not over, my child. I'm only your nurse, and you treat me like an old fool, but that's fine. But your Uncle Creon will hear about this. I promise you that.
Yes, nurse, my Uncle Creon will hear about it. Leave me alone now.
And you'll see what he'll say when he finds out you've been sneaking out at night. And Haemon, your fiancé, she's engaged, no less. She's engaged, and at 4 in the morning, she sneaks out of bed to go running around with someone else. And I'm supposed to let it go. I'm supposed to not say a word. You know what I should do? Spank you, like I did when you were little.
Nurse, you shouldn't yell so much. You shouldn't be so mean to me this morning.
Don't yell! On top of everything else, I'm not supposed to yell. Me, who promised your mother, what would she say to me if she were here? Old fool, yes, old fool, who didn't know how to keep my baby pure, always scolding, playing the watchdog, smothering them in sweaters and plying them with soup, but at 4 in the morning, you're asleep, old fool. You, who could never sleep a wink, you let them run wild. And when you go to look, the bed is cold. That's when she'll say to me, when I go up to meet her, and I'll be ashamed, so ashamed I could die if I weren't already dead already. And I won't be able to do anything but to hang my head and say, you're right, Madame Dracosta. It's true.
Please, nurse, don't cry. You can look Mama in the eye when you see her. And she'll say to you, hello, Nanny, thank you for my little Antigone. You took good care of her. She knows why I went out this morning.
You don't have a lover.
No, Nanny.
So, you're making fun of me. You see, I'm too old. You were always my favorite, in spite of your bad temper. Your sister was nicer, but I thought it was you who loved me. If you loved me, you would have told me the truth. Why was your bed cold when I came to check on you?
Don't cry, please, Nanny.
She kisses her on the cheek.
Come on now, my sweet old red apple. You remember when I used to rub your cheeks to make them shine? My old shriveled apple. Don't send your tears streaming down all those little wrinkles. Not for stupid things like this. For nothing. I am pure. I have no lover other than Haemon, my fiancé. I swear to you. I can even swear, if you want, that I will never have a lover other than him. Save your tears. You may need them again later, Nanny. When you cry like that, I am become a little girl again, and I can't be a little girl today.
Ismene enters.
You're up already? I just looked in your room.
Yes, I'm up already.
The two of them, are you both going crazy getting up before the servants? You think it's good for you to be running around with nothing in your stomachs? Is that how princesses are supposed to behave? You're barely even wearing anything, either of you. And then I have to take care of you when you both get sick.
Leave us alone, nurse. It's not cold. Honestly, it's already summer. Go make us some coffee.
She sits down, suddenly exhausted.
I'd really like some coffee. Please, Nanny. It would do me good.
My dove. Her head is spinning from hunger. And here I am, standing like an idiot, when I could be fixing her something hot.
The nurse exits quickly.
Are you sick?
It's nothing. I'm a little tired. I got up early.
I couldn't sleep either.
You need your beauty sleep.
Don't make fun of me.
I'm not making fun of you. It comforts me to see how beautiful you are this morning. I was so mean when we were little, wasn't I? I smeared mud on you. I put worms down your back. Once I tied you to a tree, remember? And I cut off all your hair. Your beautiful hair.
She strokes Ismene's hair.
How easy it must be to not think stupid thoughts with all this smooth, silky hair set so perfectly around your head.
What are you talking about? Oh, why are you talking about other things?
I'm not talking about other things.
No, I thought about it a lot, Antigone.
Yes.
I thought about it all night. You're crazy.
Yes.
We can't.
Why not?
He will have us put to death.
Of course. Everyone has their part to play. He has to have us put to death, and we have to bury our brother. That's how the roles were cast. What do you want us to do about it?
I don't want to die.
I certainly wouldn't have wanted to die either.
Listen, I thought about it all night. I'm older. I consider things more carefully. You take the first thought that comes into your head, and too bad if it makes no sense. I think things through.
There are times when you shouldn't think too much.
No, Antigone. At first, it's horrible. At first, it's horrible, of course. And I feel sorry for my brother, too, but I understand a little what Uncle Creon is doing.
I don't want to understand a little.
He's the king. He has to set an example.
I'm not the king. I don't have to set an example. Anything that comes into her head, little Antigone, the stubborn one, the naughty one, the wicked one, and then they shove her in a corner or throw her in a pit and she deserves it. She didn't have to disobey.
That's right. Go on, scowling, staring at the ground, and off you go in a flash without listening to anyone. Listen to me. I'm right more often than you are.
I don't want to be right.
Try to understand, at least.
Understand. That's the only word I ever hear from any of you ever since I was little. I had to understand that I can't touch the water, the beautiful, cold, flowing water, because it'll get the tiles wet. I can't touch the earth because it'll stain my dress. I had to understand that I shouldn't eat everything all at once, give everything in my pockets to a beggar on the street, run in the wind until I fall to the ground and drink when I'm hot and go swimming when it's too early or too late, just because I want to. Understand. Always understand. I don't want to understand. I'll understand when I'm old. If I ever get old. Not now.
Stronger than we are, Antigone. He's the king, and everyone in the city agrees with him. There are thousands and thousands of them all around us, swarming through the streets of Thebes.
Not listening to you.
They'll jeer at us. They'll grab us with 1,000 arms. 1,000 eyes will stare at us with one look. They'll spit in our faces. We'll be dragged in a cart. We'll be dragged in a cart through their hatred, through their stench and their laughter, to be tortured. The guards will be there with their idiot faces, their bloated necks spilling over their starched collars, their rough, clean hands, their beefy eyes, and we'll know that we can scream all we want, try all we want to make them understand. But they're like slaves, and do everything they're told without caring if it's right or wrong. And we will suffer. We'll feel the pain rising until we can't stand it anymore. It has to stop, but it won't stop. It will go on and on, rising and rising like a piercing scream. Oh, I can't.
You've thought it through so well.
All night, didn't you?
Of course I did.
I'm not very brave.
Neither am I. But what difference does that make?
So you don't want to live?
Don't want to live? Who was the first one out of bed every morning just to feel the cold air on her bare skin? Who was always the last one into bed? Only when she couldn't fight off sleep a minute longer, just to live a few more minutes of the night. Who cried, even when she was very little, thinking how many little animals there were, how many blades of grass in the meadows, and how she could never know all of them.
My little sister.
No, leave me alone. Don't paw me. We're not going to start sniveling together. You say you've thought it all out? You think that the whole city howling at you, that pain and fear of death, is enough?
Yes.
Well, those are your excuses.
Antigone, I'm begging you. It's right for men to believe in ideas and die for them. You're a girl.
Yes, I'm a girl. Haven't I cried enough over the fact that I'm a girl?
Your happiness is right there in front of you. You just have to take it. You're engaged. You're young. You're beautiful.
No, I'm not beautiful.
Not beautiful like we are, but differently in your own way. You know, it's you all the young guys on the street turn to look at. It's you all the young girls stare at as you walk past. Their conversation dies. They can't take their eyes off you until you turn the corner.
Young guys on the street, young girls.
And what about Haman and Tatey?
I'll talk to Haman soon. I'll take care of Haman.
Crazy.
You always say that I'm crazy about everything since the day I was born. Go back to bed, Ismene. It's getting light, see? So in any case, I can't do anything today. My dead brother is surrounded by guards, exactly as if he'd won his fight for the throne. Go back to bed. You look pale. You're exhausted.
What about you?
I don't feel like sleeping. But I promise you that I won't move from this spot before you wake up. Nurse is bringing me something to eat. Go get some sleep. The sun is barely up. You're so tired you can't keep your eyes open. Go.
I'll convince you, won't I? You'll let me talk to you more about this.
I'll let you talk to me, yes. I'll let all of you talk to me. Go sleep now, please. You need your beauty sleep.
She watches her leave with a sad smile and then falls exhausted into a chair.
Poor Ismene.
The nurse enters.
Ah! Here, my pigeon. Hot coffee and buttered toast. Eat.
I'm not very hungry, nurse.
I toasted them myself and buttered them just the way you like it.
You're sweet, Nanny. I'll have just a bit to drink.
Where does it hurt?
Nowhere, Nanny. But warm me up anyway, like you used to when I was sick. Nanny's stronger than fever. Nanny stronger than nightmares, stronger than the shadow of the bookcase that sneers at me as it moves hour by hour across the wall, stronger than the thousands of insects out there in the silence, gnawing away at something somewhere in the night, stronger than the night itself with its crazy silent noises. Nanny stronger than death. Give me your hand like you used to do. When you sat next to my bed when I was sick.
What's wrong, my little dove?
Nothing, Nanny. I'm just still a little young for all this. But you're the only one who can know that.
A little young for what, my sparrow?
For nothing, Nanny. But now you're here. I'm holding your sweet, wrinkled hand that can save me from anything. Always. I know it. Maybe it will still save me. You're so powerful, Nanny.
What do you want me to do for you, my turtle dove?
Nothing, Nanny. Just your hand like this against my cheek. There. I'm not afraid anymore. Not of cruel ogres, not of the boogeyman that eats children from their beds. Nanny, you know Ginger, my dog?
Yes.
You have to promise me that you'll never scold her again.
Animals who get everything dirty with their filthy paws should not be allowed in a place where people live.
Even if she gets everything dirty. Promise me, Nanny.
So I have to let her make a mess of everything and not say a word?
Yes, Nanny.
Well, that's a little bit much.
Please, Nanny, I know you like her, with her soft fur and her big brown eyes and her little pink tongue. And I know secretly you like petting her, too. You would be so unhappy if everything were always clean. So I'm asking you, don't scold her, please.
What if she pees on my carpets?
Promise that you won't scold her even then. Please promise me. Please, Nanny.
You're asking a lot with your wheedling. All right? All right. I'll wipe up after her without a word. You're making an ass out of me.
And then promise that you'll talk to her. That you'll talk to her often.
Who does that? Talking to animals?
And not specifically like you're talking to an animal. Talk to her like she's a real person. Like I do.
This time, the answer is no. Acting like a fool at my age. Why do you want everyone to talk to her like you do? It's an animal.
If, for one reason or another, I couldn't talk to her anymore.
Couldn't talk to her anymore. Why not?
And if she were too sad, if she were always waiting, with her nose under the door, like she does when I go out, it might be better to have her killed, Nanny, without pain.
Have her killed, my darling. Have your dog killed. You've gone crazy this morning.
No, Nanny.
Haman appears.
There's Haman. Leave us alone, nurse, and don't forget what you promised me.
The nurse exits. Antigone runs to Haman.
Forgive me, Haman, for the fight we had last night. For everything. It was all my fault. Please forgive me.
Haman, we're not hearing you.
You're not? Test.
We can hear you, but it's very, very soft and faint.
Test. I don't know why.
Again, it's audible, but very, very quiet. Like from a distance, almost.
Hello. Can you hear me now? Hello. Test. I don't
know
what
happened.
Still quiet. Hello. Test. I didn't change anything. I don't know what to do here.
Sorry.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Only if you get close like that.
Hello. I don't know what's going on. I've got my mic the same as normal.
We can hear you okay if you just lean in and speak up.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know what happened here. Did Zoom change? I don't know.
But just lean in and speak up and it'll be okay.
Okay, can you hear me like this?
Yeah.
I am so sorry. I don't know what happened here. All right. You know, I'd forgiven you the moment you slammed the door. Your perfume was still hanging in the air and I'd already forgiven you. Who did you steal it from, the perfume?
From Ismene.
and the lipstick and the makeup and that beautiful dress?
Those two.
And what was the occasion?
I'll tell you. Oh, my darling, I was so stupid. A whole evening wasted. A beautiful evening.
We'll have other evenings, Antigone.
Maybe not.
And other fights, too. A happy love is full of fights.
A happy love. Yes. Listen, Haman.
Yes.
Don't laugh this morning. Be serious.
I am serious.
And hold me. Tighter than you've ever held me before. So that all your strength flows into me.
There. With all my strength.
That's good. Listen, Haman.
Yes.
I wanted to tell you this morning. The little boy we would have had together.
Yes.
You know how well I would have defended him against everything.
Yes, Antigone.
I would have held him so tightly that he would never have been afraid, I swear it. Not of the shadows or the approaching night or the anguish of the motionless midday sun. Our little boy, Haman, his mama would never have been very imposing or very stylish, but she would have been more faithful than all the real mothers in the world with their big bosoms and their big aprons. You believe that, don't you?
Yes, my love.
And you believe, too, that you would have had a real wife.
I have a real wife.
You loved me, Haman. You're sure of it. You loved me that night.
What night?
You're absolutely sure. The night of the party when you came to find me in my corner. That you didn't have the wrong girl. You're sure that you've never regretted it since, never thought, or secretly, silently to yourself, even once, that you should have, really should have asked Ismene?
Idiot.
You love me, don't you? You love me as a woman. Your arms around me aren't lying. Your strong hands on my back aren't lying, or your smell, or your warmth, or this enormous confidence that floods through me when I rest my head in the hollow of your shoulder.
Yes, Antigone, I love you as a woman.
I'm dark and scrawny. Ismene is pink and golden like a fruit.
Antigone.
I'm all red with shame, but I have to know this morning. Tell me the truth, please. When you think that I will be yours, do you feel inside you like a great empty space is being hollowed out? Like something is dying.
Yes, Antigone.
I feel that too. And I wanted to tell you that I would have been very proud to be your wife, your real wife, who you would rest your hand on in the evening as you sat down, even without noticing like something that was really yours.
She lets go and moves away from him.
There. Now I'm going to tell you two more things, and when I have said them, you have to leave without asking me anything. Even if they seem ridiculous, even if they cause you pain, promise me.
What are you going to tell me?
Promise me first that you'll leave without saying anything, without even looking at me. If you love me, you'll promise me. You see, how I'm asking you. Promise me, please, Haman. It's the last time you'll ever have to put up with my craziness.
I promise.
Thank you. So here it is. Yesterday first, you asked me just now why I came to you with Ismene's dress and the perfume and the lipstick. I was stupid. I wasn't sure that you really desired me, and I did all that to be a little more like the other girls, to make you want me.
it was for that?
Yes. And you laughed, and we fought, and my bad temper got the best of me, and I ran off. But I came to you last night so that you would take me, so that I would be your wife before.
No.
You promised not to ask me why. You promised, Haman. Please. Anyway, I'll tell you. I wanted to be your wife last night because I love you in that way, very much. And because I'm going to cause you pain, my darling, forgive me. Because I can never, ever marry you.
He stands stupefied for a moment. She runs to the window.
Haman, you promised me. Leave. Leave right now without saying anything. If you speak, if you take a single step toward me, I'll throw myself out of this window. I swear to you, Haman, I swear to you on the head of the little boy that we had together in our dreams, the only little boy I'll ever have. Go now. Go quickly. You'll know tomorrow. You'll know soon.
She ends with such despair that Haman obeys and begins to move away from her.
Please go, Haman. It's the only thing you can still do for me if you love me.
Haman exits. She stands motionless for a moment, her back to the room. She closes the window. She goes to a chair in the middle of the room and sits. Then, softly, as if strangely appeased.
There. There it is. It is finished for Haman, Antigone.
Ismene enters, calling.
There you are. Oh, there you are.
Yes, here I am.
I can't sleep. I was afraid that you'd go out and try to bury him, even though it's daytime. Antigone, my little sister, we're all here around you. Haman, Nanny, and me, and Ginger, your dog, we love you, and we're alive. We need you. Polynices is dead, and he didn't love you. He was always a stranger to us, a bad brother. Forget him, Antigone, like he forgot us. Let his unfeeling soul wander eternally without rest. It was Creon's decision, not ours. Don't try to do something that's beyond your strength. You always take on everything, but you're only a little girl, Antigone. Stay with us. Don't go out there tonight. I'm begging you.
Antigone rises, a strange smile on her lips. She goes to the door. On the threshold, she speaks softly.
It's too late. When you saw me this morning, I had just come back.
Antigone exits. Ismene follows her. Ismene exits. As soon as she's gone, Creon enters with his page.
One of the guards guarding the body, you said. Bring him in.
The page exits and returns with the guard. The guard is a coarse, simple man who at the moment is green with fear. He stands at attention.
Guard member Jonas, second company.
What do you want?
Well, here it is, sir. We drew straws to see who'd come, and I drew the short one. So here I am, sir. We thought it'd be better if only one of us came to explain, and also we couldn't all three come and abandon our posts. There's three of us on duty, sir, guarding the body.
What do you have to tell me?
It's three of us, sir, not just me. The others are Durant and Senior Guard Bodie.
Why didn't the Senior Guard come?
Right, sir? That's the first thing I said. The Senior Guard should go. When there's no ranking officer, the Senior Guard is responsible, but the others said no, they wanted to draw straws. Should I go get the Senior Guard, sir?
No, you're here already. Talk.
I have 17 years in the service. I enlisted voluntarily. The medallion, two citations. I have a good reputation. I'm a soldier's soldier. I live to carry out orders. My commander is always saying, you can always count on Jonas.
That's wonderful. Get to the point. What are you afraid of?
Normally, it should have been the senior guard. I've been recommended for senior guard, but I haven't been promoted yet. I should have been promoted last June.
Will you get to the point already? If something has happened, all three of you are responsible. I don't care who's standing here.
Well, sir, here it is. The body. We were all alert, though. We had the hardest watch, 2 o'clock. You know how it is, sir, when the night is almost over. Your eyelids feel like lead. Your neck is stiff. All the shadows moving and the morning fog coming in. They chose the perfect time. We're there, talking, stamping our feet. Nobody was sleeping, sir. I can promise you that none of us were sleeping. Anyway, it was so cold. All of a sudden, I glance over at the body. We were just 2 steps away, but I looked at it once in a while anyway. I'm like that, sir. I'm a stickler. That's what my commander says. You can always count. I saw it first, sir. The others will tell you I raised the alarm.
The alarm? Why?
The body, sir. Somebody had covered it up. But, well, not totally, you know. They didn't have time with us standing there. Just a little bit of dirt. But still, enough to hide it from the vultures.
You're sure it wasn't a dog scratching up the earth?
No, sir. We thought that, too. We were hoping. But the dirt was thrown across the body, just like the priests do in the rites. It was somebody who knew what they were doing.
Who dared? Who was crazy enough to defy my edict? Did you take any tracks?
No, sir. Nothing but a footprint lighter than a bird's. Later, we looked more carefully. Durant went farther off, and he found a shovel, a little kid shovel, old and rusty. We thought it couldn't be a kid that pulled that off, but the senior guard held onto it anyway, as evidence.
A child. The shattered revolution seeping up again already, like acid all around me. The friends of Polynices, with their gold held hostage here in Thebes, the greasy leaders of the masses suddenly allied with the princes, and the priests trying to pocket a little something in the middle of it all. A child? They must have thought it would be more touching. I can see him, their child, the face of a hired killer and the little shovel gently wrapped in paper under his coat. Unless they trained a real child for the job, seduced him with slogans. The priceless gift of innocence for their cause. A pale young boy who'll spit at my firing squad. Precious, fresh young blood on my hands. How beautiful. But they must have accomplices. And maybe in my guard. Listen carefully.
Sir, we did everything by the book. Durant sat down for half an hour because his feet hurt, but not me, sir. I was on my feet the whole time. The senior guard will tell you.
Whom have you told about this?
No one, sir. We drew straws and I came right here.
Listen very carefully. You stand a second watch. Send back the relief. Those are your orders. I don't want anyone but you near the body, and not a word. You're all guilty of negligence. You'll be punished regardless. But if you talk, if news travels through the city that someone buried Polynices' body, all three of you will die.
We haven't told anyone, sir, I swear to you. Besides, I was here, and maybe the others have already talked to the relief. Sir, I have 2 children. One of them is very small. You can testify at the court-martial that I was here, sir. I was here with you. I have a witness. If somebody talked, it was one of them. It can't be me. I have a witness.
Go. Run. If nobody knows, you'll live.
The guard exits, running. Creon is silent for a moment.
Child. Come here, young man.
He takes the page by the shoulder.
This news will spread. We can't stop it. And so it needs to come from us first. We have to go tell everyone about this now. And then things could get really ugly. What fun. Would you die for me? Would you go out there with your little shovel?
The page looks at him. Creon turns to leave, taking the page with him.
Yes, of course you would, without a thought.
We hear him sigh again as they exit.
Child.
Creon and the page exit. The chorus enters.
So here we are. The spring is wound up tight. And when it's released, it will unwind all by itself. That's the convenient thing about tragedy, You only need the smallest flick of a finger to get it started. Almost nothing. A look for 1 second at a girl tossing her hair as she passes you on the street. A desire for respect when you wake up one beautiful morning, like something you might have for breakfast. One question too many that you ask one evening. That's all. After that, all you have to do is sit back and watch. It's relaxing. It runs by itself. It's finely crafted, a well-oiled machine as old as time. Death, treason, despair all stand ready. And outbursts and the storms and the silences, all the silences. The silence at the end when the executioner's arm rises. The silence at the beginning when the two lovers stand naked, facing each other for the first time, not daring to move quite yet in the darkened room. The silence when the roar of the crowd bursts out around the victor, like a film with a broken soundtrack. Silent shouting from all those open mouths. All the clamor is only an image. And the victor, already vanquished, alone in the middle of his silence. Tragedy is clean. It's restful. It's certain. In melodrama, with its traitors and fanatic villains, with its persecuted innocents, its avengers, its heroic Saint Bernards, its glimmers of hope, death becomes horrible, like an accident. The hero might have saved himself. The nice young man might have arrived in time with the police. Tragedy is relaxing. For one thing, everyone is among friends, since everyone is innocent, after all. It doesn't matter that someone kills and someone else is killed. That's just how the roles were assigned. And then, most importantly, tragedy is peaceful, because you know that there's no hope. No filthy hope. That you're caught, like a rat in a trap. The sky has fallen on your back, and the only thing left to do is to shout. Not to whine, no, not to complain. To shout at the top of your voice whatever you have to say. Things you've never said and maybe didn't even know were in you. And for no reason, to hear yourself say them, to learn them for yourself. In melodrama, you struggle because you're hoping to escape. That's demeaning. It's practical. Here, it's gratuitous. It's kingly. And in the end, there's nothing more you can do.
The three guards enter, pushing Antigone ahead of them.
So here we are, and now it begins. The spring is released. Little Antigone has been caught. For the first time in her life, little Antigone will be able to be herself.
Okay, that's enough out of you. You can tell it all to the king. I was just following orders. Whatever you were doing there, I don't want to know about it. Everyone has excuses. Everyone's protesting something. If we had to listen to people, if we had to try to understand them, we'd be finished. Yeah, okay, hold on to her and be quiet. Whatever she has to say, I don't want to hear about it.
Tell them to take their filthy hands off me. They're hurting me.
Their filthy hands? You could be more polite, young lady. I'm polite.
Tell them to let me go. I'm the daughter of Oedipus. I'm Antigone. I'm not going to run away.
The daughter of Oedipus, of course. The hookers we bring in every night, they tell us to be careful, too. They're all sleeping with the chief of police.
Guards laugh.
I want to die, but I don't want them to touch me.
What about dirt and dead bodies? You don't mind touching them. Their filthy hands, look at yours!
Antigone looks at her handcuffed hands and smiles slightly. They're covered in dirt.
They took your shovel away, didn't they? You had to use your fingernails the second time. The nerve this girl has! I turned my back for 1 second. I asked for a chew, and there she goes. Time enough for me to stuff it in my cheek. Time enough to say thank you. There she was, scratching like a little hyena in broad daylight. And she fought like hell when I grabbed her, the little bitch. She tried to scratch my eyes out. She was screaming about how she wasn't done yet. She's a lunatic.
I arrested a loony the other day. She was showing her ass to people on the street.
Hey, Bodhi, what kind of party are we going to have, the three of us, to celebrate?
Let's go to Hunchbucks. The old witch has got good beer.
We're off duty on Sunday. Should we bring our wives?
Nah, let's actually have some fun. With the women around, someone's always fighting about something, and the kids always have to pee. Hey, Bodhi, a few hours ago, we didn't think we'd be celebrating anything, did we?
Maybe they'll give us a bonus.
Maybe, if it turns out to be important.
Flanders in the third, when he caught the arsonist last month, he got an extra month's pay.
Whoa, hold on. If we get an extra month's pay, let's not bother with the hunchback. We should go to the Arabian Palace.
To drink? Are you nuts? They charge twice as much for drinks at the palace. If you want to go upstairs, okay. Listen, here's what we'll do. We'll go see the hunchback. We'll fill up, and then we'll go to the palace. Hey, Bodhi, you remember that fat one at the palace?
Oh, man, you were so hammered that night.
But, you know, if we get an extra month's pay, our wives will find out. I mean, they might give us a public ceremony.
Well, we'll see. The party's a different thing. If there's a ceremony at the barracks, like for decorations, our wives will be there and the kids. And then we'll all go to the hunchbacks.
Yeah, but what if we want dinner? There we have to order ahead, you know?
I'd like to... Oh.
I'd like to sit down for a bit, please.
Yeah, okay, she can sit, but don't let her go.
Creon enters with the page. The guard instantly shouts.
Let go of this young lady. Remove those handcuffs. What is this?
The watch, sir. I brought the rest of them.
Who's guarding the body?
We sent for the relief, sir.
I told you to send them back. I told you not to say anything.
We didn't say anything, sir. But then when we arrested her, we thought one of us should bring her in. And this time we didn't draw straws. We decided we should all come.
Imbeciles. Where did they arrest you?
Near the body, sir.
What were you doing near your brother's body? You knew that I had forbidden anyone to go near it.
What was she doing, sir? That's why we brought her in. She was digging up the earth with her hands. She was trying to cover up the body again.
Do you understand exactly what you're saying?
Sir, you can ask them. We uncovered the body when I got back, but with the sun getting hotter, it was starting to smell, so we went up on the little hill nearby to get some breeze. We told ourselves, in broad daylight, we weren't risking anything. Even so, just to be sure, we decided that one of us would always be watching the body. But by noon, with the sun overhead and the smell had gotten worse because the wind had died down, the heat was like a sledgehammer. I had my eyes glued open. Everything was wobbling like jello. I couldn't see a thing. I go over to my buddy to ask for some chew to clear my head. Time enough to stuff it in my cheek, sir. Time enough to say thank you. I turn around. There she was, digging with her hands in broad daylight. There's no way she thought we couldn't see her. And when she saw me running at her, you think she'd stop? You think she'd try to escape? No. She kept digging as fast as she could, like she didn't see me coming. And when I grabbed her, she fought like a demon and tried to keep digging. She yelled at me that the body wasn't totally covered yet.
Is this true?
Yes, it's true.
We uncovered the body, of course, and then we passed the watch to the relief without saying anything, and we brought her to you, sir, and here we are.
And the first time, last night, that was also you?
Yes, that was me, with a little iron shovel that we used to take on vacation to make sandcastles at the beach. It was Polynices' shovel, actually. He carved his name into the handle with a knife. That's why I left it near him, but they took it. So the second time, I had to use my hands.
We thought maybe it was an animal scratching in the dirt. When we first saw her, with the air wobbling and the heat, someone said, no, it's an animal. You think so? I say to him, but it's too skinny to be an animal. It's a girl.
All right. I may ask you for a report in a little while. For the moment, leave me alone with her. Take these men aside, young man, and they don't speak to anyone until I see them again.
Should I put the cuffs back on her, sir?
No.
The guards exit, following the page. Creon and Antigone are alone, facing each other.
Did you tell anyone about your plan?
No.
Did you meet anyone on your way?
No, no one.
You're absolutely sure of that?
Yes.
All right. Listen. You're going to go to your room. Go to bed. Say that you're sick, that you haven't been out since yesterday. Your nurse will say the same thing. I'll make those three men disappear.
Why? You know perfectly well I'll just go out there again.
Why did you try to bury your brother?
I had to.
I had forbidden it.
I had to anyway. Those we don't bury wander through all eternity without ever finding rest. If my living brother had returned exhausted from a long hunt, I would have taken off his shoes. I would have brought him food to eat. I would have made his bed. Polynices has finished his hunt. He's going back to the house where my father and my mother and Eteocles as well are waiting for him. He has a right to rest.
He was a rebel and a traitor. You knew that.
He was my brother.
You heard the edict proclaimed in the square. You saw the notice on every wall in the city?
Yes.
You knew the punishment promised to anyone, whoever it was, who dared to give the funeral rites?
Yes, I knew that.
Well, perhaps you thought that being the daughter of Oedipus, the daughter of the arrogant pride of Oedipus, was enough to be above the law.
No, I didn't think that.
The law is made first for you, Antigone. The law is made first for the daughters of kings.
If I had been a servant in the middle of washing my dishes when I heard the edict being read, I would have wiped off the greasy water off my arms and I would have gone out in my apron to bury my brother.
That's not true. If you'd been a servant, you wouldn't have doubted that you would have been killed and you would have settled for staying home and crying for your brother in private. But that you thought you were of royal blood, my niece, and the fiancé of my son, and that I would never dare to have you actually put to death.
You're mistaken. I was certain you would have me put to death, actually.
The pride of Oedipus. You are the pride of Oedipus. Oh, yes, now I see him behind your eyes. I believe you. Of course you thought you would have been killed, and that seemed like a perfectly natural ending for you, you arrogant girl, just like your father. He was never even searching for happiness. For him, the worst of human sufferings was not enough. Humanity doesn't fit well on you in your family. You need a grander destiny, a more personal relationship with death. And so to kill your father and sleep with your mother and learn all of it afterwards, avidly, word by word, it's quite a drink, isn't it? The words that condemn you. And how greedily you drink them when your name is Oedipus or Antigone. And afterwards, what could be easier than to poke out your own eyes and go begging with your children on the highways? Well, not anymore. Those times are over for Thebes. Thebes has a right by now to a prince without a history. My name is only Creon, thank God. I have my feet on the ground, my hands in my pockets, and since I am king, I've resolved, with less ambition than your father, to return a little order to this absurd world, if that's possible. It's not an adventure, it's a profession that you work at every day. And like any profession, not every day is fun. But since the work is here to be done, I will do it. And if tomorrow a grimy messenger comes stumbling down from the depths of the mountains to announce that he isn't quite sure about the circumstances of my birth, I will simply ask him to be so kind as to go back where he came from, and I will not, for so little reason, start interrogating your aunt or analyzing dates. Kings have other things to think about than their personal dramas, my child.
He goes to her and takes her arm.
Now listen carefully. You are Antigone. You are the daughter of Oedipus. That's true. But you're 20 years old. And not so long ago, all this would have been settled with a good spanking and sending you to bed without supper. Have you put to death? Have you looked at yourself, my little sparrow? You're too thin. You need to fatten up a little bit so that you can bear Haemon, a big baby boy. Thebes needs that more than it needs your death, I assure you. You're going to go to your room right now. Do what I told you and keep quiet. I'll see to the silence of those men. Go, go on, go. And don't annihilate me with your stares like that. You think I'm a monster. I understand that. You think I have no poetry in my soul, but I love you very much, even with your horrible stubbornness. Don't forget that I gave you your very first doll as a present not so long ago.
Antigone doesn't reply. She starts to leave.
Antigone!
He stops her.
Your room is that way. Where are you going?
Perfectly well.
A silence. They stand facing each other again.
What game are you playing?
I'm not playing a game.
Don't you understand that if anyone other than those three fools finds out that you tried to do, I'll be forced to have you put to death. If you give up this insanity, if you shut up about this right now, I have a chance to save you. But I'll lose that chance in 5 minutes. Do you understand that?
I have to go bury my brother. The guards have uncovered him.
You really want to repeat this pointless gesture? There are still guards around Polynices' body, and even if you manage to cover it up again, they'll just uncover it. You know that. All you'll accomplish is to make your fingernails bleed and get yourself dragged back in here again.
Nothing but that I know. But that at least I can do. And I have to do what I can.
Do you really believe in it? In burial by the book? In this soul of your brothers, condemned to wander forever if you don't throw a little dirt on the body with the right words? Have you heard the priests of Thebes reciting the ritual? Have you seen those poor, tired underlings cutting short the gestures, swallowing the words, ruining a decent death so they'll have time to get another drink before lunch?
Yes, I've seen them.
You've never thought that if someone really loved, that if someone you really loved was there, lying in the coffin, that you might suddenly start screaming, shouting at them to be quiet, to go away?
Yes, I've thought that.
And now you're risking death because I've refused to give your brother this ridiculous passport, this litany of gibberish that you would have been the first to be ashamed of if you'd seen it performed. It's absurd.
Yes, it's absurd.
Then why are you doing it? For the people? For the ones who believe in it? To turn them against me?
No.
Not for them. Not for your brother? Then for whom?
For nobody. For me.
So you really want to die? You had that look in your eyes. Like a rabbit in a trap.
Don't get maudlin. Do what I'm doing. Do what you have to do. But if you're a human being, do it quickly. That's the only thing I ask of you. My courage won't last forever.
I want to save you, Antigone.
You're the king. You can do anything, but that you cannot do.
You think so?
You can't save me, and you can't stop me.
Proud Antigone. Little Oedipus.
You can only have me put to death.
And if I have you tortured?
Why? To make me cry? Beg for mercy, swear to do anything you want, so that you can watch me begin again as soon as the pain is gone?
Listen to me. You've cast me as the villain in your little drama, and you've cast yourself as the heroine, and we both know it. But don't count on that advantage too much, you little brat. If I were a real barbarian, an ordinary tyrant, we would have cut your tongue out long ago, torn your body limb from limb and thrown away the pieces. But you see something in my eyes that hesitates, that keeps me from calling in my guards. And so you mock me, you taunt me, you attack me from every direction. What are you after, you little demon?
Let go of me, you're hurting my arm.
No, I'm stronger than you are. I have my own advantages. Maybe this is all I have to do after all. Twist your arm, pull your hair, just like the kids in the schoolyard. I'm your uncle, that's true. But we're not very affectionate with each other in this family, are we? Do you find it funny, at least, this old man hanging on your every word, this pathetic monarch with the power to do anything, who's had others killed and just as pitiable as you, I assure you, and who's still here taking all this trouble to rescue you from death.
You're squeezing too hard now. It doesn't hurt anymore. I can't feel my arm.
He looks at her and then lets go with a little smile.
God knows I have other things to do today. But even so, I'm going to spend whatever time I have to take to save you, you little pest.
He sits her down in a chair in the middle of the room. He takes off his jacket, turns and advances on her, powerful, intent on his purpose.
The day after a failed revolution, there's plenty of work to be done, believe me. But those pressing affairs will wait. I don't want you to die over a question of politics. You're worth more than that, because your dear Polynices, his anguished soul and his decomposing body surrounded by guards and this whole drama that's inflaming you, it's all politics. First of all, I'm not a tender-hearted man, but I'm meticulous. I like things to be clean, orderly, well-scrubbed. You think it disgusts me any less than you that meat out there rotting in the sun? In the evening, with the wind blowing in from the sea, you can already smell it at the palace. It turns my stomach. But even so, I will not close my window. It's revolting, and just between us, it's stupid. It's monstrously stupid, but all of Thebes needs to smell it for a while. You know what? I would have buried your brother just for the sake of sanitation, but to make the sheep, I govern, understand. The whole city needs to stink of Polynices' body for a month.
You're disgusting.
Yes, my dear, the job requires it. We can discuss whether you should do the job or whether you shouldn't, but if you do it, you have to do it like this.
Why do you do it?
One morning I woke up King of Thebes. And God knows I loved other things in this life than power.
You should have said no then.
I could have. I considered it. But suddenly I felt like a workman refusing work. It didn't seem honest. I said yes.
Well, then too bad for you. I didn't say yes. What makes you think that I care about your politics, your obligations, your sad little stories? I can still say no to anything I don't like, and the choice is mine and mine alone. And you with your crown, with your guards, with all your royal baggage, you can only have me put to death because you said yes.
Listen to me.
If I don't want to, I don't have to listen to you. You said yes. I have nothing more to learn from you. But you, look at you drinking in my words. If you don't call your guards, it's because you want to hear me through to the end.
You make me laugh.
No, I make you afraid. That's why you're trying to save me. It would be easier, after all, to have little Antigone alive but silent in the palace. You're too sensitive to make a good tyrant. That's all it is. But you're going to have me put to death soon anyway. You know that, and that's why you're afraid. Men are so ugly when they're afraid.
All right. Yes. I'm afraid of having to have you killed if you insist on it. It's something I'd rather not do.
I don't have to do anything that I'd rather not do. I suppose you would rather not have refused my brother a grave either. Say it. Would you rather not have done that?
I said it already.
And you did it anyway. And now you're going to have me killed without wanting to. And that's what it is to be a king.
Yes, that's what it is.
Poor Creon. With my broken, dirty nails and the bruises your guards left on me, with my fear twisting my stomach, I am a queen.
Then have pity on me. Live. Your brother's corpse rotting under my windows is a high enough price for order to reign in Thebes. My son loves you. Don't make me play with your life as well. Don't make me pay with your life as well. I've paid enough.
No. You said yes. Now you will never stop paying.
But good God, try to understand for 1 minute, you little fool. I've tried hard enough to understand you. There has to be someone who says yes. There has to be someone to steer the ship. I'm taking on water from all sides. It's full of crime, poverty, misery, and the wheel is spinning with the wind. And the crew refuses to work. They're busy pillaging the hold, and the officers are building a nice little raft with enough fresh water just for themselves. And the mast is cracking, and the wind is howling, and the sails are starting to tear, and all these fools are going to die together because they're only thinking about their own precious skins and their own little problems. So do you think you have the time to make precise distinctions, to ask if you should say yes or no, to wonder if you'll pay too high a price someday and if you'll still be a man when it's over? You grab the wheel. You write the ship in the face of a mountain of water. You shout an order and you shoot into the mob at the first man who advances. Into the mob. It doesn't have a name. It's like the wave that crashes down on the deck in front of you, the wind that tears at you, and the thing that falls in the crowd has no name either. It might have been the smiling man who gave you a light the other day before. He's lost his name, and so have you. Clinging to the wheel, you've lost your name. Only the ship has a name, and the storm. Do you understand?
I don't want to understand. It's fine for you. I'm here for other things than understanding. I am here to say no to you and then to die.
It's easy to say no.
Not always.
Oh, to say yes, you have to sweat, roll up your sleeves, seize life with both hands and plunge into it up to the elbows. It's easy to say no, even if it means you have to die. You only have to sit and wait. Wait to live. Wait for them to kill you. It's too cowardly. It was invented by men. Can you imagine a world where even the trees had said no to the sap, or the animals had said no to their instinct to hunt or to mate? The animals, they at least are good and simple and strong. They move together, pushing one another courageously all the same road. And if one falls, the others pass by. And it doesn't matter how many are lost. There will always be one from each species ready to bring more children into the world and continue on the same road with the same courage, just like those who came before.
What a dream for a king. Animals. That would be so simple.
You despise me, don't you? It's funny. I've imagined it many times. This conversation with a pale young man who would have tried to kill me and from whom I could get nothing afterwards but scorn. But I never thought it would be you over something this stupid.
He puts his head in his hands. He seems to be near the end of his rope.
Listen to me anyway, for the last time. I don't like my part in all this, but it's my part, and I will have you killed. Only, first, I want you to be absolutely sure of yours. Do you know what you're dying for, Antigone? You're about to sign your little name in blood for all eternity, but do you know what you're signing? Do you know the whole sordid story? The story of Eteocles and Polynices. The story of your brothers. No, you think you know it, but you don't. No one in Thebes knows it except for me. But it seems to me that today you have a right to hear it.
He sits, lost in thought for a moment, his head in his hands, elbows on his knees.
It's not a very pretty story, as you'll see. First, what do you remember about your brothers? Two playmates who made fun of you, no doubt, who broke your dolls, always whispering secrets in each other's ears to infuriate you.
They were older.
Later, you must have admired them with their first cigarettes, their first suits. Then they started going out at night smelling like men. And after that, then they never noticed you at all.
It was a girl.
And you heard the doors slamming when they came home. Your mother crying, your father shouting, they're giggling in the hallways, and they walk right past you, sneering and spineless, smelling of liquor.
Once I had hidden myself behind a door, It was morning. We had just gotten up and they were coming home. Polynices saw me behind the door. He was all pale, his eyes shining, so handsome in his evening clothes. He said to me, "Well, what are you doing here?" And he gave me a big paper flower that he had brought back from his evening.
And you kept it, didn't you? And yesterday, before you went out, you opened the drawer where you kept it, and you looked at it for a long time to give you courage.
Who told you that?
Poor Antigone, with your paper flower from a nightclub. Do you know who your brother was?
I knew you would say terrible things about him, whoever he was.
A mindless party animal. A vicious, soulless little carnivore who only knew how to drive his cars faster than the rest and spend more money in the bars. Once, when I was there, your father had just refused to pay off one of his huge gambling debts, and his face went white. And he raised his fist, spitting foul words at your father.
That's not true.
The bastard punched your father right in the face. It was pitiful. And your father was sitting at his desk, his head in his hands. His nose was bleeding. He was crying. And leaning against the wall, Polynices sneered and lit up a cigarette.
That's not true.
You were 12 years old. None of you saw him for a long time after that. That's true, isn't it?
Yes, that's true.
It was after that fight. Your father didn't want to have him punished. So he left. He enlisted in the Argive army. And from the day he joined the Argives, the manhunt began against your father. Against this old man who couldn't make up his mind to die, to let go of his kingdom. One attack followed another, and the assassins we caught always confessed, in the end, that they'd been paid by him. But not only by him. And this is what I want you to know. What took place in the wings of this drama in which you're burning to play a part. What went on in the kitchen. Yesterday, I saw to it that Eteocles was given a grand funeral. Eteocles is now a hero and a saint for Thebes. The whole city was there. School children empty their piggy banks to buy the wreaths. Old men, pretending to be moved, with trembling voices, glorified the good brother, the faithful son of Oedipus, the loyal prince. I also gave a speech, and every priest in Thebes, in all their finery, and with an air of such solemnity. And the stirring music and the military honors. It had to be done. I couldn't allow myself the luxury of having a villain in both camps. But I'll tell you something, just between us, something that only I know, something horrible. Eteocles, the paragon of virtue, was not worth any more than Polynices. The good brother also tried to have his father assassinated. The loyal prince also decided to sell Thebes to the highest bidder. Isn't it funny? The treason for which Polynices' body is now rotting in the sun, I have proof that Eteocles, sleeping in his marble tomb, was also preparing to commit. It was only by chance that Polynices' plan succeeded first. We're talking about two petty thieves who lied to each other as well as to us, who slaughtered each other like the cheap hoodlums they were over a division of the spoils. Only I had to make a hero out of one of them. So I had their bodies located out on the battlefield, in the midst of all the others. We found them in each other's arms, for the first time in their lives, probably. They were skewered on each other's swords. And then the Argive cavalry had ridden over them. They were mashed to a pulp, Antigone, unrecognizable. I had one of the bodies brought in, the less mangled of the two, for my national funeral. And I gave the order to let the other one rot where it was. I don't even know which was which. And I assure you, I don't care.
There is a long silence, neither one moving, not looking at each other.
Oh, Why did you tell me this?
Creon gets up, puts on his jacket.
Would it have been better to let you die a victim to that ridiculous story?
Maybe. I believed.
What are you going to do now?
I'm going to my room.
Don't stay alone. Go see Hammond this morning. Have the wedding. Soon.
Yes.
You have your whole life ahead of you. All this arguing was just a lot of empty talk, I promise you. You have the real treasure. You have yourself, your life.
Yes.
Nothing else matters. And you were going to throw it away. I understand you. I would have done the same thing at 20. That's why I was drinking in your words. I was listening from the depths of time to a little Creon, thin and pale, who was ready to sacrifice everything, just like you. Get married quickly, Antigone. Be happy. Life is not what you think it is. It flows like water between your open fingers when you're young, and you can't even feel it. Close your fingers. Close your hands. Quickly. Hold on to it. You'll see. There in your hands, it'll become a very simple thing. A hard little nugget that you gnaw at sitting in the sunlight. Everyone will tell you that it's something else because they need your strength and your spirit. And don't listen to them. Don't listen to me when I give my next speech in front of Eteocles' tomb. It won't be true. Nothing is true but what you don't say. You'll learn, just like I did too late, that life is a book that you love, a child playing at your feet, a tool you hold firmly in your hand, a bench you sit on in the evening outside your home. You'll still despise me, but you'll see that I'm right, that this discovery is the meager consolation in getting old. There may be, after all, nothing more to life than happiness.
Happiness.
Not much of a word, huh?
What would my happiness be? What kind of a happy woman will she become, little Antigone? What ugly little things will she have to do day after day to get her teeth into life and tear it off? Her little shred of happiness. Tell me, who will she have to flatter? Who will she have to lie to? Who will she have to sell herself to? Who will she have to let die as she looks away?
You're out of your mind. Be quiet.
No, I will not be quiet. I want to know what I have to do to be happy right now, because I have to decide right now. You say that life is so beautiful. I want to know what I have to do to live.
Do you love Hammon?
Yes, I love Hammon. I love a Hammon who is young and unyielding, demanding and faithful like me. But if your life, your happiness, are going to wear him down, if Hammond stops growing pale when I do, if he stops thinking I must be dead when I'm 5 minutes late, if he stops feeling alone in the world and hating me when I laugh and he doesn't know why, if my husband turns before my eyes into a distinguished stranger, if he has to learn to say yes too, then that Hammond I don't love.
You don't know what you're saying anymore. Be quiet.
No, I know what I'm saying, but you can't hear me. I'm speaking to you from too far away now, from a kingdom you can't enter anymore with all your wisdom, your wrinkles, your belly. I'm laughing, Kriya, because suddenly I see you at the age of 15 with the same look of helplessness, clinging to your belief that you can do anything. Life has only added the lines on your face and the flab around your middle.
Will you ever be quiet?
Why do you want me to be quiet? Because you know I'm right. I see it in your eyes. You know I'm right, but you'll never admit it because at this very moment, you're defending your happiness like a bone.
Yes, yours and mine, you idiot.
You all disgust me with your happiness. With your life that you have to love at all costs. You're like dogs that lick everything they see, looking every day for that little chance at happiness if you don't ask for too much. I want everything, here and now, whole and complete, or else I want nothing. It's not enough to be modest and content myself with a few crumbs if I have been very good. I want to be sure of everything today, everything as precious and beautiful and perfect as when I was young, or else I want to die.
Now it begins. Just like your father.
Like my father, yes. We ask questions all the way through to the end. Until there's truly not a chance of hope left alive, not the smallest chance of hope left to struggle, we stamp it out wherever we find it. Your hope, your precious hope, your filthy hope.
Oh, shut up. If you could see yourself shouting those words, how ugly you are.
Yes, I am ugly. It's demeaning, isn't it? The shouting, the fighting over scraps. Papa only became beautiful afterwards when he was really sure in the end that he had killed his father, that he had slept with his mother, that nothing, absolutely nothing could have saved him. Then he grew calm, very suddenly, almost smiling, and he became beautiful. It was finished. He only had to close his eyes to never see any of you again. Oh, your faces, your sorry looking faces, all candidates for happiness. You are the ugly ones, even the most beautiful of you. You all have something ugly in the corner of your eye or clinging to your mouth. You said it so well just now, Creon, in the kitchen. You all look like cooks.
I order you to be quiet. Do you hear me?
You order me, cook? You think you can order me to do anything?
You're throwing your life away. The antechamber is full of people. They'll hear you.
Well, open the doors then. Let them hear me.
Good God, will you ever be quiet?
Hurry up, cook. Call your guards.
Ismene enters.
Trudy, are you there? You're on mute.
I am here. I'm just a little lost page-wise because I had to pee. I'm sorry.
Page 45.
45, great. Thank you.
Next page.
That's pretty full. Oh,
can I help?
Yeah, thank you. Excuse me. Ah, there you go. Antigone.
What do you want?
Antigone, forgive me. You see, I came. I have courage. I'll go with you now.
Where will you go with me?
If you have her killed, you'll have to kill me with her.
Oh, no, not now. Now it's me. It's me alone. You're not going to come die with me now. That would be too easy.
I don't want to live if you die. I don't want to live without you.
You chose life and I chose death. Spare me your whining. You could have come with me this morning on all fours in the night. You could have come back with me the second time to dig up the earth with your fingernails to be arrested like a common thief.
Well, I'll go tomorrow.
You hear that, Creon? Her too. Maybe it'll catch on when others hear me. Why are you waiting to shut me up? Why are you waiting to call your guards? Come on, Creon, a little courage. It'll only hurt for a second. Come on, cook, you don't have any choice.
Guards!
The three guards appear immediately.
Take her away.
Finally, Creon.
The guards grab Antigone and lead her away. Ismene follows them, calling after her.
Antigone! Antigone!
Creon is left alone. The chorus enters and goes to him.
You're out of your mind, Creon. What have you done?
She had to die.
Don't let Antigone die, Creon. We will carry the scar with us for centuries.
She wanted to die. None of us was strong enough to make her want to live. I understand it now. Antigone was made for death. She may not have known it herself, but Polynices was only a pretext. When she had to give that one up, she found other reasons soon enough. The important thing for her was to say no and to die.
She's a child, Creon.
What do you want me to do for her? Condemn her to live?
Haman enters. Do we have Sean?
Maybe Elizabeth, if Sean's not here, could you just jump in with his lines?
Sure.
Thanks.
Father.
Forget her, Haman. Forget her, my son.
You're out of your mind, Father. Let me go.
I tried everything to save her, Haman. I tried everything. I swear to you, she doesn't love you. She could have lived. She's obsessed. She chose death.
But Father, they're taking her away. Father, don't let those men take her away.
She's spoken now. All of Thebes knows what she did. I have no choice but to have her put to death.
Let go of me.
Can't we make up something? Say that she's crazy? Lock her up?
They'll say it isn't true. That I'm sparing her because she's going to marry my son. I can't.
Can't we buy some time? Maybe get her out of the city?
The people already know. They're shouting outside the palace. I can't.
Father, the people are nothing. You are the master.
I am the master under the law, not above it.
Father, I am your son. You can't let her be taken from me.
Yes, I can, Haman, my son. Be brave. Antigone has ended her life. Antigone has already forsaken us all.
Do you think I can live without her? Do you think I'll accept your life every day from morning to night without her? And all your petty problems and all your mindless chattering, all that emptiness without her?
You have to accept it, Haman. We all have a day. More painful for some than others. It comes sooner or later, but it comes. When we finally have to accept the fact that we are men. For you, that day is today. And I see the tears in your eyes and the pain in your heart, my little boy, for the last time. When you turn and walk away from me, when you cross the threshold as you leave in a moment, it will be over.
It's already over.
Don't judge me, Haman. Not you.
All that strength and courage. The giant god who lifted me in his arms and saved me from the monsters and the shadows. Was that you? That smell of old paper in the glow of the lamp at night in your library when you showed me the secrets of all your old books. Was that you?
Yes, Haman.
All that care, all that pride, all those books full of heroes, all that just to wind up here. To be a man, like you said, and so happy just to be alive?
Yes, Haman.
Father, this is not right. You can't let this happen. This can't be happening. We're not standing with our backs against a wall where we can only say, yes, you're still powerful like you've always been. I'm begging you, Father. Let me admire you. Let me still admire you. I'm too alone and the world is too bare if I can't admire you anymore.
We're all alone, Haman. The world is bare. And you've admired me for too long. Look at me. This is when you become a man. The day you look clearly and see your father's face.
Antigone! Help!
Haman exits, running.
Creon, he ran out like a madman.
Yes. Poor boy, he loves her.
Creon, you have to do something.
There's nothing more I can do.
Creon, he is wounded to death.
Yes. We're all wounded to death.
The three guards enter, pushing Antigone ahead of them. The guards brace themselves against the door with a howling mob outside.
They're crowding into the palace.
Creon, I don't want to see their faces anymore. I don't want to hear their shouting anymore. I don't want to see anyone anymore. You have my death now. That's enough. Let me be alone until it's over.
Creon exits as he shouts to the guards.
Guards at the doors! Empty the palace. You stay with her.
Exit all but Antigone and the guard. Antigone looks at him in silence for a moment.
So it's you?
What's me?
My last human face.
Guess so.
Let me look at you.
Okay.
Was it you who arrested me earlier?
Yeah, that was me.
You hurt me. You didn't have to hurt me. Did I look like I wanted to escape?
Okay, don't give me that. If you weren't here waiting to die, I would be.
How old are you?
39.
Do you have children?
Yeah, two of them.
Do you love them?
It's none of your business.
A pause. He begins to pace. For a moment, all we hear is the sound of his footsteps.
Have you been a guard for a long time?
After the war, I was a sergeant. I reenlisted.
Do you have to be a sergeant to be a guard?
Usually, yeah. It's that or assignment in a special unit, but if you become a guard as a sergeant, you lose your rank. So, say if I meet an army private, he doesn't have to salute me.
Really?
Yeah. Of course, generally he does. Privates know that a guard is an officer. On the financial side, a regular guard's pay is about the same as for special units, but for the first 6 months, you get a bonus that brings you up to sergeant's pay. Only as a guard, there are other advantages. Housing, utilities, benefits. When you add it all up, a married guard with two kids brings in more than a sergeant on active duty.
Really?
Yep. That's why there's this rivalry between the guards and the sergeants. You probably noticed the sergeants make a point of looking down on the guards. Big argument is the advancement. In a sense, that's true. Advancement in the guards is harder and it takes longer than in the army, but you can't forget that a brigadier in the guards is different from a sergeant chief.
Listen.
Yeah?
I'm going to die soon.
The guard doesn't respond. A silence. He paces. After a moment, he continues.
On the other hand, people have more respect for a guard than for a sergeant. The guard is a soldier, but he's a really civil servant, too.
Do you think it hurts to die?
I couldn't tell you. In the war, guys who were wounded in the stomach, they had it pretty bad. I've never been wounded. Actually, that's hurt my chances for advancement.
How are they going to put me to death?
I don't know. I think I heard him say that in order not to defile the city with your blood, they were going to wall you up in a cave.
Alive?
Yeah. At first.
Silence. The guard pulls out his chewing tobacco, starts to make himself a plug.
My tomb. My bridal bed. My final resting place. My eternal home beneath the earth.
She sits, small and alone, in the middle of the big empty room. She seems to be a little cold. She wraps her arms around herself.
all alone.
In the caves of Hades, outside the city gates, in the middle of the day, out there in the sun. Really great time for whoever gets the detail. At first, they decided to give it to the army, but last I heard, it'll be the guards who get the job. Give it to the guards. They can take anything. You still surprised there's bad blood between guards and sergeants?
Two animals.
More about them?
Animals press up against each other to keep warm. I'm all alone.
If you need something, I can send out for it.
No. I just want you to give someone a letter after I'm dead.
What? A letter?
A letter that I'll write.
Are you kidding? A letter? You got a lot of nerve. You know what kind of risk I'd be taking playing that little game?
I'll give you this ring if you accept.
Is it gold?
Yes, it's gold.
You understand, if they search me, I'll be court-martialed. That doesn't bother you? What I can do, if you want, is I can write in my notebook what you would have wanted to say. Later, I'll tear out the page and deliver it. In my handwriting, if it's not a problem.
Your handwriting. It's too ugly. All of this, it's all too ugly.
Look, you know, if you don't want to, I'm here.
Yes, all right. Keep the ring and write. But hurry up. I'm afraid we don't have much time left. Write, my darling.
Guard takes out his notebook, licking his pencil.
Is it for your boyfriend?
My darling, I wanted to die, and perhaps you won't love me anymore.
My darling, I wanted to die, and perhaps you won't love me anymore.
And Creon was right. It's terrible now next to this strange man. I don't know anymore why I'm dying. I'm afraid.
Right. It's terrible.
No, Haman. Our little boy. Only now do I understand how simple it was to live.
Hey, come on. You're going too fast. How do you expect me to write it all down? It takes time, you know?
Where were you?
It's terrible now, next to this strange man.
I don't know anymore why I'm dying.
More why I'm dying. Nobody ever knows why they die.
I'm afraid. No, cross that out. It's better if no one ever knows. That would be like them seeing me naked and touching me after I'm dead. Just put, forgive me.
So I cross out the end and I put, forgive me instead?
Yes. Forgive me, my darling. Without little Antigone, you all would have had such peace. I love you.
Antigone, you would have had such peace. I love you. Yeah, that's it?
Yes, that's it.
Funny letter.
Yes, it's a funny letter.
So who's it to?
At that moment, the door opens. The other guards appear. Antigone gets up, looks at them, then looks back at the first guard, who has stood up behind her as he pockets the ring and closes his notebook with an air of importance. He sees Antigone looking at him. Flustered, he shouts to regain his composure.
Okay, that's enough out of you.
Antigone smiles sadly. She lowers her head. She goes to the other guards without a word. They They all exit. The chorus enters.
There. It's over for Antigone, and Creon's turn is coming soon enough. We all have to face the same moment in the end.
The messenger enters suddenly in great agitation.
The queen! Where is the queen?
Why? What do you have to tell her?
Terrible news. Antigone has just been thrown into her grave. They were rolling in the last blocks of stone when suddenly we heard wailing come from the tomb. Everyone is silent and listens. It's not Antigone's voice. It's an unexpected cry that comes from the depths of the cave. Everyone looks at Creon, and he's the first to realize. And he howls suddenly, like a madman. Take away the stones! Take away the stones! The slaves throw themselves at the wall of stones, and in their midst, the king toils and sweats along with them with bleeding hands. We move enough for the smallest man to through the opening. Antigone is at the back of the tomb, hanging from the cords of her sash, blue, green, and red, like a child's necklace. And Haman is there, on his knees, holding her in his arms and moaning, his face buried in her dress. Another stone is moved, and finally Creon can enter. We can see his white hair. He tries to lift Haman up, pleads with him. Haman ignores him, but he suddenly turns. His eyes black, his face so much like the young boy he once was. He looks at his father in silence, and then suddenly he spits in his face and draws his sword. Creon springs back out of reach. Haman stares at him with his child eyes, heavy with scorn, and Creon is impaled by his stare like a knife. Haman stands looking at this old man, trembling at the other end of the cave, and then, without a word, he plunges his sword into his own stomach and collapses against Antigone, bracing her in a giant pool of blood.
Creon enters with his page.
I've laid them out next to each other at last. They're washed clean now. At peace. A little pale, but so calm. Two lovers the morning after their first night. Their story is over.
But not yours, Creon. There's still something for you to learn. Eurydice, the queen, your wife.
Good woman. Always talking about her garden. Her jams, her sweaters, her eternal sweaters for the poor. It's funny how the poor are eternally in need of sweaters. You'd think they didn't need anything but sweaters.
The poor in Thebes will be cold this winter, Creon. When she heard about the death of her son, the queen finished her row of knitting, and then she put down her needles carefully, deliberately, like everything she does, maybe a little more calmly than usual. And she went back to her room, her lavender-scented room, with all its cushions and embroidered lace. And she cut her throat, Creon. She's lying on one of the two old-fashioned twin beds, exactly where you saw her as a young girl one night long ago, and with the same smile on her face, maybe just a little bit sadder. If it weren't for the large red stain on the sheets around her throat, you'd think she was sleeping.
Her too. They're all sleeping. That's good. It's been a rough day. Must be nice to sleep.
And now you're alone, Creon.
Alone. Yes.
Silence. He puts his hand on the page's shoulder.
Young man? I'll tell you something, which they all don't seem to understand. When the work is there in front of you, waiting to be done, you can't just cross your arms and say no. They say it's a dirty job, but if you don't do it, who will?
I don't know, sir.
Of course you don't. You're lucky. The real trick is never to know. Are you in a hurry to grow up?
Oh, yes, sir.
Well, you're a fool, young man. You should never grow up.
A clock strikes the hour in the distance.
5 o'clock. What do we have today at 5 o'clock?
Council meeting, sir.
Well then, if we have a council meeting, young man, we will go to it.
They exit, Creon leaning on the page.
And so here we are. Without little Antigone, it's true, they all would have had such peace. But now it's over. They're at peace anyway. Everyone who had to die is dead. Those who believed one thing and those who believed another. Even those who believed nothing and were caught up in the story without understanding any of it. Just as dead, all of them. Stiff. Useless. Rotting. And those who still live will begin very slowly to forget them and to mix up their names. It's over. Antigone's fever has subsided and we'll never know its name. Her work is done. A great sad quiet falls on Thebes and on the empty palace where Creon will begin to wait for death.
As the chorus was speaking, the guards have entered. They sit down, their beer bottles next to them, their collars unbuttoned, and they begin to play cards.
Only the guards are left. To them, all of this means nothing. It's not their business. They go on playing cards.
The curtain falls quickly as the game of cards continues. End of play.